So it's in the middle of the night, about 2 o'clock in the morning. And a lot of people have been talking about family offices, and I've talked to quite a few people in private. And it's kind of hard because it's hard to explain. And I've known a couple people with family offices. I never did set one up for myself, although I began doing it. A lot of what I'm going to talk about is the stuff that I had a very good friend who did this. And I was starting to structure what I was doing based on what she had done. And I did a whole bunch of research, and I got lots and lots of different documents. And I thought about writing this and then realized that yeah, I couldn't. So I thought I would just talk about it. And there's a lot of information that it's because this I've been around this kind of stuff for a minute that terminology gets to be flipped back and forth. And so I just kind of want to straighten out some of that stuff, you know? So, family office is a term that really covers I've got a bubble that I'm trying to bring up, but it wouldn't work. So family office covers all kinds of organizations and services that are involved in managing large private fortunes, basically family fortunes. Now, there's multiple ways to organize these, and some of them can be family-owned companies, and in those, the family wealth is all pooled together in one package. And the other way to do it is a family-owned company or bank department that provides financial services for those clients, but the family maintains all the decision-making powers. So it's two different ways of doing it. So you can do it all within, or you have an organization that helps you make the decisions, but the family maintains the final say-so on what they're doing. Basically, the best thing for you to do is figure out what you're good at and then have your family wealth revolve around a subject that you know very well. Makes it easier, you know? So, originally, when family offices first started getting into existence, they were owned by the family. They weren't, none of these services were put out. So, put out for have other people take those jobs. So, it's kind of confusing, I think, for some people when we talk about family offices because they assume that the family owns it all when that's not the case. There's two different types of ways to organize this. One where like I said, where the family owns it all, or you know, you have outsourced services. But if the family is the owner of the organization, the family can have a financial service company that they own, and they use the services of that financial company exclusively for itself, for themselves. So you start the financial company, but then you own the financial company, and the financial company only takes care of one family, depending on how big your wealth is, you know. That has a lot to do with it. So, but in order for to avoid one family having to pay the costs of the it's pretty expensive to hire these kind of people. So, and it's pretty high operational costs of just having one single family use this company. So a lot of times what will happen is families decide to offer their services of their family office to other families. So when a family office opens up their services to other families, it becomes a multi-family office. And when you do that, it's your office tailors their services to the clients or the families that the office helps. Okay. So usually the amount of family wealth under management is at least 100 million. Okay. Oh, I can't make this. And I had to yawn. Excuse me. It's kind of revealing, I guess, to calculate the minimum wealth under the management in the when you compare the return of expectations and targets. And so that shows you what the resulting costs are of your family office. And there's no clear lower limit for a family office. So it's the cost of the family office plus the targeted return on investment. That must be, you must be able to do that with the way you've chosen to set up your asset allocation and your structure. Family offices are probably one of the largest or fastest growing investment vehicles in the world. And we're going to see a tremendous amount of people in this RV with substantial wealth, and they're going to increasingly see the virtue of setting one of these family offices up. I really encourage those of you that are in my group to consider multiple family offices. And where you have one group of professionals that takes care of you, like two or three different people, okay? Two or three different people in this organization, because you're gonna find out really quickly that it takes a minute to get big enough to need the services of a full-fledged family office where you set it up. Not that you don't run it, but you have other people do it. So if you set one up for yourself, a single family office, and you have a company that you put together to run it, you're going to soon find that those, in the beginning, those employees are going to be twiddling their fingers. They're not going to have enough stuff to do. So myself, I'm going to reach out to a couple different people and say, hey, I would like to do, I want to start a family office company, and I want to offer the services of that company to you. So three of us or four of us or two of us, I don't know what the number is going to be. We'll set up a family office suite of professionals, and then we all use that suite and we divide the costs between ourselves based on the hours we use that family office, use the professionals in the family office. So it's kind of difficult to estimate how many family offices there are in the world. And right now, with everything going on, there's, a lot of these people are going to go to jail. So a lot of these professionals are going to be up for grabs, although I'm not really sure, how Usually family offices, they are not involved. If the family is a criminal enterprise, the family office employees, they're not involved with a criminal enterprise. They don't want to be involved in it whatsoever. They just give you the professionals in there. They give you advice as to what you can do with your money, better ways to place your money. And because there's so many of us that are going to be out and about when this thing rolls, that many of us do not know how to do substantial wealth management. So these family wealth offices are going to be a very big emerging market that has traditionally not been thought that important, because the family wealth management the family management offices have been in, many of these offices, like the Rockefellers, they've been in business for 200, 300 years. So those people that get hired into those family wealth management organizations, they don't ever leave, because the family's been there forever, and they're going to continue. As more arrests come and more, as we become more millionaires, this is going to be really a major tool to help long-term wealth management, especially for those of us that have, a lot of assets in XRP, currency, silver, whatever your assets are. But if you have a traditional, a non-traditional amount of assets, you are really going to need to hire a group of professionals. Because the other way to do it is to send people within your family to school to take up these positions, which you're not going to have time to. You're going to have to come out of the box with solutions with this. Hence the reason why I'm doing this recording. So, if you look at wealthy families and families that are rising, their family interests in global areas, they all have family offices. And for the most part, this is not a phenomena that a lot of newly rich people are aware of, nor do they have classes set up to teach newly wealthy what this is about. So it's going to take probably 6 or so months for the people that RV that have a lot of money to actually even figure out what a family office is, let alone hire everybody for those roles, which our group is going to do that immediate, because this is a way to serious wealth, to maintain serious wealth. So I want to talk about the reasons you want to set up a family office. I want to talk about staffing concerns. A lot of conversations I had with one of my friends. Actually, I know a couple of friends that have family offices. And what services that should be covered by a family office, and kind of how to optimize investment functions, and how to ensure that those optimizations work for the benefit of your family. I'm not going to really touch much about regulatory or tax issues. You need a lawyer for that, and that's not me. So I also want to talk a little bit about the relationship between the family and the external professionals that are brought in to run a family office. And it is critical, it is crucial for the family office to start with a balance between the two groups, between the people that you hire and the people in the family. Because if you don't, you're gonna shoot yourself in the foot. It won't work very well. So some of the things I'm talking about are gonna be from personal experience of people that have family offices. And then other things I'm gonna talk about is from the viewpoint of the professionals that work in family offices. And I had because I thought I was gonna be worth when we were doing the hyperbaric grow chambers, I really believed I was going to need a family office. So I had gotten very, very, very far down this road, thinking that we were about to sell 100 of these units at 1.5 million each. So I could see my future that I needed to have a family office. So I went very far into this. I interviewed a ton of people. I talked to a ton of people, and it feels like all of those notes and all of that information has just been languishing, waiting for me to do something with it. So I had thought a little bit about, should I do this recording or should I not? Because this is all information, folks. This is hours and hours and hours and hours and hours and hours and hours of information that I'm kind of shuffling down into, maybe an hour or so talk with you guys. So at the end, my end thing is when you're done listening to this, is that you have a recording to give you a reasonable expectation that you'll be able to set up your own family office and to know what the benchmarks are, to know what the goals are, or the best practices are of successful existing family offices. So, there is three different kinds of family offices, okay? And we're going to go, there's a SFO, an MFO, and a VFO. The SFO is single family office. It is your own family, all of your family members. You are a private company that manages the affairs of your own family, nobody else. In one of these kind of offices, the family itself does all the investments, holds all the fiduciary, all the trusts, and has the estate management of your family. And many families will also have a concierge function inside the family. This is a family that's usually SFO is usually a family with over 100 family members, because some of the positions with inside the single family office are stuff you need to go to college for to learn. So, they may start out working with wealth management company, and then members of the family goes to school, become experts in their fields, excuse me, and then they develop their single family offices. The second type of family office is called an MFO, and it's a multifamily office. And this type is the one that I believe is going to be the best solution for many of my groups, okay? So a multifamily office is they manage the affairs of multiple families, and they may or may not be connected to each other, but they usually have a common thread, something that all families that are in the MFO, they think alike. Now, what could that be? For our group, it could be an MFO that revolves around cryptocurrency. It could be an MFO that revolves around cannabis. It could be MFO that revolves around healthcare. But you should, if you're considering doing an MFO, you want to make sure that the other families that you're going to connect with are of the same like mind. My friend started her MFO with different families, not in the same industry, and it just went to hell in a handbasket. So, like a single family office, okay, the MFO would be managing the fiduciary. They'd be managing the trust and the estate businesses of each of these multiple families. as well as the investments of their families. Okay. Some of these, well, actually, most of them provide concierge services. Most MFOs are commercial, meaning that one family member sets up the MFO and then says, okay, we want to accept this person or that person or the other person into the MFO. One person owns the MFO and the services are spread amongst several families. Now, why do we do it with one person owning it? Because one person has to be financial, have the financial obligations to pay the MFO. When you bill out the other families that are using your MFO, you can do it one of two ways. You can do it as a profit center, or you can do it as a balance of costs. I was setting mine up as a balance of cost. And the reason why I was setting mine up as a balance of cost is because I'm going to be working with the foundation. And as long as I'm working with the foundation, the amount of money that they are talking about paying me is going to be fantastic. I mean, I'm not going to need to worry about setting up vertical businesses and that kind of stuff, although I will because I really actually love doing that. So basically, the MFO is commercial and they sell their services to other families, but they only sell their services to the families that they are approved to sell to by the owner of the MFO. So basically, if Tom, I got Tom over here and Harry over here. Tom is running a crypto company and Harry is running an airline company. Okay, we're both friends, but I tell my MFO, look, I can't have Harry in this because I don't want to branch out into airplane investments where Tom over here, we both are into, digital assets and, we want to focus on that. So that's how that's how it's chosen as to who goes into these, okay? Now that's a commercial one, okay? But the ones that I want to do is a private MFO, okay? A private MFO, they are exclusive to a very few families. They are not open to other families. And what happens is, in time, if you start out your single family office, you will end up becoming an MFO. And the reason why is due to the success of your single family office. If you're doing really, really good and you're making good moves and you're making good money, other families are going to want to, hey, how did you do that? And they want to go and get involved. So you can either start them out as an FFO, SFO, or they will become one in time. Me, forget about it. It's just me. I don't have any other family members that I'm going to have involved in this. So for me, a single family office is not practical whatsoever because, in my 60s, I don't have family members I can send to college. So I'm going to set mine up from the get as a MFO. I wish I could burp. This little bubble is just driving me nuts. So when you are adding other families, it becomes easy because it becomes a situation of the economy of scale. And the economy of scale is far easier to achieve through an MFO structure. And because of that, it's going to allow you to easily accept other families into the family office structure. The reason being is once they figure out how to do your stuff, they're done and they're looking for more work. And if you're not big enough to keep a team of about 15 people working, you're throwing money down the drain. So you might as well reach out to other families that are of the same like mine and offer them access to your MFO. Now, the last kind is the one that I am afraid of. And I think that I'm afraid of it probably because I'm older, and because I absolutely don't trust this kind of beeswax. But I'm pretty sure the younger generation are going to be all over this, like stink on poo. But me, I'm staying far away from it. And the last one is a VFO, virtual family office. Now, a VFO has all the benefits of family office managing, like their financials and their affair. But a VFO is for those that don't want to set up an actual company to do so. And so they outsource all their services to external providers, and these providers have services and consultants. Now, the reason why I don't like VFOs is because they flip, they switch all the time. You do your trust with this company, and it might be a couple weeks later you have some more updates to your trust, and you use a VFO service, and that same person's not there to talk to you. So there's no continuity. And it's just not the way I want to do things, but I'm sure there's people out there that with where they're at and what they're doing, they feel comfortable with their own skills to run a family management office. So a virtual family office might be the right choice for them. But for me, no, I'm starting out with the MFO right from the get. So there is the base of why you do this, okay? So some people are like, but Parker, just put your money in the bank and collect the interest. But Parker, just go buy a building and, No, it's not like that, okay? A virtual family, excuse me, a multifamily office, the root desire of a multifamily office is smooth intergenerational transfer of wealth. That's the whole thing in a nutshell. Oh, finally burped. Yay! You want a smooth intergenerational transfer of wealth, and most important, you want to reduce fights, infighting in the family. Okay? So, what happens as years go by, new generations cycle through, the problem for disputes gets bigger and bigger with each generation, because the founder of the family either passes away or becomes infirm and cannot run it. So there's a lot of different reasons, but it's a complex problem to manage a family wealth, especially if you're managing a family wealth where you're actively growing that wealth. So I got some reasons why, and these were the reasons why I'm doing it. And so here's what they are. So I want the governance. I want the governance and the management structure. Now, the beauty part of a family office is it provides all of the management structure that can deal with the family's wealth transparently. Okay. A lot of times when you're dealing with family wealth, you have some feeling, some kind of way about different assets, and maybe you just don't want to tell your granddaughter what you're doing. Maybe for whatever reason. Like, I wouldn't want to tell my family that I'm in the XRP because they would laugh at me. So I know that I would not be as transparent as I needed to be because I simply won't do it. So by having a company in place, they will help the wealth be transparent. And when you're talking from passing from generation to generation to generation, that transparency is key, so there's no infighting, okay? So there's other advisory services for family members, and you want all of that under a single entity owned by a family or owned by a family management service with a like mind, okay? So what are these advisory services? They could be information about stuff that's coming out in the market that that is the same path of financial interest that you have for your family. It could be companies that watch the rise and fall of values of different areas of real estate that, you know, would, hey, look, this is coming into play. You pay attention, go buy this. This is in your goal setting. There's just a lot of different kinds of services. So another one is the alignment of interest. So a family office structure really kind of makes sure that there's a really good alignment of the interest between your financial advisors and the family. So say you come from a family of motocross racers, okay? You want to have your family office structure that is involved with motorcycles or manufacturing of motorcycles or whatever it is, but it's the same interest. You don't want to set up a family office structure of people that want to, you know, help the country of France and you're an American citizen. You know, you want to align your interests with the people that you hire and the family that you have, the family wealth management that you have. So this alignment gets called into question with non-family office structures where you've got multiple advisors working with multiple family members. It makes it really difficult. So having a multiple family office group allows for that structure that is goes across different family members with ease. There's not putting the pressure on any one person. It's putting the pressure on the office group itself. It's often found historically that there are higher profit returns. So what you're doing is you're centralizing and you're having a lot of professionalism on your asset management activities. So when you're doing centralization of costs, the family offices that you're working with, they often have a lot, they make a lot more money. And it's a lot lower risk because you're all pulling for the same direction. And the family offices run like this can really set up a way to formalize the investment processes and maximize investment returns for all of the family members. They basically set out a roadmap. And for those of you that have seen Ms. Parker's household manual, that's basically what they do. They set out a roadmap like that, a family office roadmap that you just follow. And it makes it really easy to make money really well because the work is already done and already laid out in a multifamily office. So family office MFO allows for separation. Well, I don't know if separation is the right word. Maybe distinction. Because you want to have a line between your family business and your family wealth. Your family business or your surplus wealth. You don't want to mix those two together. Because to do so, if something happens to your business or to your family wealth, if they're tied together, it's like a sinking ship. One will pull down the other. So by having a MFO, you have massive separation to keep yourself financially safe. Now, had I set up, oh, I hate talking about this. Had I set up my Rocky Mountain High Builders Corporation, I would have been able to set it up with separation, so that I would not have lost $40 million. It's that cut and dried. I had everything commingled because I was a reflection of my invention. I was a reflection of my product. And I was really freaking proud of it. And pride goeth before a fall. And had I listened to people that were trying to tell me to set up family offices before we started building, I wouldn't be in the position I'm in today. It's just that blunt. Okay. So when you have family offices, it allows you to have an operational consolidation of risk. It gives you a way to do performance management. It gives you a way to have performance reporting. Okay. It helps the principal and the advisor make a lot more effective decisions to meet your family management objectives. I didn't do that. I didn't do it. And I paid for it through the nose. So I will be setting up a family office management immediate once I get my money. So what are the doubts? Okay. What are the reasons why you don't want to do it? Okay. So I told you the reasons why you should do it. Now, why would you think, oh, I don't know about this? Okay. So it is a massive pain in the ass undertaking to set up a family office. There are so many different things to think about with this. And it was just me. I mean, I didn't have anybody else I was talking to. I wasn't really talking to my mentor at the time. So basically, I self-doubted myself until I just didn't do it. Is the basically what I did. Hard to say. Cost. There's a high cost for regulatory and compliance reporting, okay? So because of the cost of regulations and compliance reporting, I'm such an idiot. I didn't want to pay the fees. I didn't want to do it. I thought, I know what I'm doing. It's my invention. I know everything about it. I don't need anybody to tell me nothing. Ba 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 ba. No. Okay. You need to do the regulation. You need to do the compliance reporting, because in those two things, you get to ha you have a level of understanding of your assets that are under management. And you have a level of understanding of what you need to underpin, what you need to have better, okay? What you need to set up. And that underpinning allows you, if you do it in the right manner, that underpinning you need to have in high underpin in order to offset your other fixed costs. That's just that simple. Family offices function better when they are operating from a mindset of use of sophisticated marketing, sophisticated legal and tax structures. You want the best tax lawyer you can get your hands on, okay? Now, because this is a fairly new way to deal with money with the new rich, the nouveau riche, there is a major absence of emerging markets in family office management. There has been, you see these multimillionaires, that jackpot winners and Powerball winners, okay? You see little connection between the huge amount of wealth that they walk away with and the number of those winners going into family offices. So, what happens is the wealth is controlled by the winner of the Powerball, but that wealth is also inhibited because it do they do not know or use family offices. So, there's no transfer of wealth from one generation to the next because the person that originally gets access to the main tranche of money has no idea how to make it work for them, unfortunately. So, other issues is there's problems of high operation costs in a single family office. And so if you do a multiple family office, those operational costs can be spread amongst several families and that pool their wealth ideas or their wealth structures together. And they may not commingle money, but they may be in tandem operations with we buy we buy an apartment building, and I put in a certain percent, and say I have three other families that I'm co-managing with, and we take that opportunity to the other three families, and two of them say yes, and the other one says no. Well, that's great because the bulk of us are putting our assets together, and we're managing them under one umbrella, but it's assets we all are looking for. So MFOs, they want a range of family size, a range of wealth, and a range of maturity levels of the families. So, because if you have that range, that means each of these families can run the risk of not receiving personalized advice that they would have done in a dedicated family office setup. But the reason why that wouldn't happen is because the advice fits across all of the families that are in the MFO. So some of the positives can also be seen as negatives, okay? So privacy is one of them, okay? So I am comfortable with my family wealth privacy being shared with one or two other families, okay? I'm not comfortable with my wealth privacy being shared in a large multi-MFO, like 20 or 30 families. So you have to figure out what is your comfort level of privacy or non-privacy. There's going to be some people that are going to say, I don't want anybody to know anything. I'm going to set up a single family office just by myself because I don't want anybody to know anything about my wealth. I'm going to tell you that's going to be hard because if you don't know how to do it and you're doing it by yourself and you're hiring everything or everybody within your family, you're going to find gaps. You're going to find gaps in knowledge. And the need for that knowledge may override your preference for extreme privacy. That's something you got to figure out on your own. So here's another pro con, external management. So when you set up a family office, it is pretty much contingent on the level of trust and comfort that the families that are working together have with the external asset managers. Okay. Trust inside of family wealth management comes from long-standing relationships with external managers. Now, me, I have a ace in the hole. My mentor has had the same external manager for his family office service for almost 30 years. And I'm basically getting that handed to me on a silver platter. So I know the trust that he's had with this multifamily office, and I know how wealthy this group has made Tom. Ironically, almost all of Tom's family is now passed away or in prison. Unfortunately, my mentor had two children that got involved in drugs, specifically cocaine smuggling. and they are serving life terms in prison. So he has no one to pass his family wealth management people to when he passes. So he when we first started talking about the hyperbaric growth chambers, he was like, I have a multiple family office set up and both my brothers are gone. They didn't have any kids and both of my sons are in prison. So it's all set up, but there's just me. So I'm going to take on his MFO, and we're going to add probably one or two other, probably two or three other families into it. So I'm very, 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 very lucky because I'm going to benefit for those years and years of trust that was built between him and this and his external family office. So those long-term relationships are really important. So when you're setting up your multifamily office, you got to keep that in the back of your head that this is a person who you're interviewing. You're going to have this person involved with your family for 20, 30, 40 years. So remember that when you're interviewing, okay? Your expectations on return. Family offices wholly and completely depend on them standing the test of time because they have ensured wealth preservation, okay? And there's some difficulty in securing market returns in the past recent years. I mean, you know what's happened with COVID and you know about the market crashes. So there's been some single family management companies that have a tremendous amount of contention in them right now. The trust within the family is tested. The single family, multiple family office is tested, and there's been a lot of them been destroyed because the next generation is pressing for different goals and different objectives to manage the family's wealth based on all of the problems with securing returns in the past few years with COVID and all this other crazy stuff that's been going on. So this is why trust becomes super, super, super important. Because you need to believe that the people that are working for you in your MFO is worthy of trust and has the skills to do the financial planning. And yeah, they're gonna, when the whole market dips, you're gonna dip too. So you got to be ready and able to handle that. So the heart of this whole thing, I keep trying to burp and I keep wiggling and wiggling and wiggling, but it will not. This little bubble is just like driving me nuts. So, hold on a minute. I know what I'm going to do. Go over here and here to a new window.
From bad to worse, that's the focus of
Oh,
tonight's end.
shush. Hold on. And I'm gonna stop this right now, and I'm gonna make a little music break, and I'm gonna go get me a soda pop. I'll be right back. Thank you. sounds like I'm listening to a funeral. That was bad. Oh my goodness. Nope, that's not working. Hold on, I just gotta take a break. Hold on just a minute. Oh, come on, wiggle, wiggle, come on.
This shit, that ice cold, Michelle fight for that white gold. This one for them hood girls, them good girls, freight masterpiece. Styling, wilding, living it up in the city. Got chucks on with Saint Laurent, gotta kiss myself, I'm so pretty. Too hot, the police and the firemen. Too hot, like a dragon wants to retirement. Too hot. Say my name, you know who I am, I'm too hot. My brand about that money, breaking it. Girls hit you, hallelujah. Girls hit you, hallelujah. Girls hit you, hallelujah. Cause Uptown Punk don't give it to you. Cause Uptown Punk don't give it to you. Cause Uptown Punk don't give it to you. Saturday night and we in the fuss. Don't believe me, just watch. 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 Wait a minute. Come on, put some nigga in it. Check the set. Time to check. Julio, get the stretch. What's up, Harlem, Hollywood, Jackson, Mississippi? If we show up, we're gonna show up. Smoother than a fresh drop, skip it. Time out. Got the police and the firemen. Too hot. Like a dragon, but on a retirement. Too hot. They say my name, you know who I am. I'm too hot. I'm a bad boy, bad money breaking man. Girls hit you, hallelujah. Girls hit you, hallelujah. Girls hit you, hallelujah. Cause Uptown Punk don't give it to you. Cause Uptown Punk don't give it to you. Cause Uptown Punk don't give it to you. Saturday night and we in the spot. Don't believe me, just watch. 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 Hey, hey, hey.
Well, went and got a soda pop. And that made the bubbles come up. Yay! Finally. A little bong. Bong break. I realize as I'm doing this, I'm super nervous because I'm not a financial planner. And I really, really, really worry about giving people wrong advice or wrong information. Because a lot of everybody, that's, you know, most of us. Oh, there we go. Oh, finally. Oh. I had so much gas, I felt like I was just a bubble plant. I don't know. Oh my goodness. So painful. So I worry about it. You know, I worry about talking about this stuff because I don't want to give bad information. But I know it's jaded because it's just my personal opinion. I've watched this with other people. Like I said, I was planning to do this for myself when I started my company, and I just didn't do it. And what's really ironic is the very reasons why you need to do it is the very reasons which kind of destroyed me financially. So looking back, I am not going to mess around. I'm going to actually get this done, no matter how freaking difficult I think it is, because having wealth management services, family, multiple family office management is going to be the difference between keeping my money in generational so that my grandkids have it. Over me just kind of doing what I think is right based on my background, but I don't have any, you know, I don't have any experience with multiple families, just me. And boy, did I make up some good mistakes, boy. Woo! So I don't want to do that again. I've had enough try. I want to hire a professional now. I'm really type A. I don't like to give up power or control to anybody or anything, especially if I think I can do it myself. But once I've burned myself bad enough, I go, you know what? You might want to do things differently. So that's the reason why I'm even posting this or even recording this, is because I know this is the right thing to do, because I've done it. I've not done it and hurt myself financially fairly extremely. So what can you expect? Okay. Family management. What will you get out of it? Okay. That's what I'm going to get out of it. Investment management services. Okay. I can start a company and make it fully vertical in about 6 months to a year. I've done it multiple times. It's not hard. Okay. But what I can't do is ensure wealth preservation once you make the money. I don't know what to invest in, excuse me, or the amounts of stuff I should be investing in once I've made the original bean. You know, what do we do with it? Okay. I end up doing the exact same thing with my businesses that I do with XRP. I never take anything out. I just let it ride and build it and build it and build it, and build it. But like Brian and Neil both say, you know, you have different exit strategies of getting your investment out. Well, I didn't do that. And because I didn't do that, I know that one of the big reasons for me in setting up a family office is financial planning. I need someone who can look at all these different things and give me a real evaluation of the overall financial situation of what I'm doing. Now, I poo-pooed this because I didn't think this was important, okay? And then probably, oh, I don't know, maybe 6 months before I moved to Colorado, I sent my overall project plan to my mentor. And I didn't really consider that I was asking him to help me with financial, evaluating my financial situation, but that's exactly what I was doing. And I shouldn't have done that to him. I should have started planning my multifamily office. So investment and management services, they will help you determine what your investment objectives are and what your philosophy is going to be for your family. You have a philosophy, you just don't know you have it. And part of what exposes that is talking to a professional financial planner. Okay? When you talk to these kind of guys, they're trained in determining your risk profile. They're trained in determining investments, investment horizons. They're trained in asset allocation. How much of your money do you need to mix between the capital market and the non-capital market in your different types of investing? Okay. They're going to help you develop supporting banking relationships. Okay. So this one is going to come in really, really big for me because I want to set up farmers across the United States and have funding sources for these farmers to be able to buy back property and equipment to be able to work the land again. I need all that supporting, those supporting banking relationships across the United States. Do I have access to that? Hell no. Do I want to have access to that? Oh, to the double L hockey sticks. No, I hate banks. So for me to talk to a bank, I might as well just slam my toe in the door because it's going to get me the same amount because I end up talking to banks and then they say enough bullshit. I say, fuck you and your bullshit. And I walk out. Well, that does not help you with financial planning. In fact, it will severely limit your ability to do financial planning. So don't do that. That's why you need investment management services. And I will have a very good investment managed service embedded into my MFO because for me, that's seriously important. Okay. I need a financial planner to manage my liquidity. Okay. Now, what do I mean by that? I swear I was not born a girl. I swear I must have been born a boy in a different life. I swear I must have been. Why? Because I do not like having cash. I do not like having cash. I do not like carrying cash. I do not like shopping. I will avoid. I need to budget money to go get makeup and my hair done. What do? I cut my own hair and I don't wear makeup. That has got to change. But to give you an idea, that's how bad I do not manage personal liquidity, let alone business liquidity. One of the reasons why I've been so successful when I do vertical businesses is because I take the liquidity from the first thing we start and I pour it into the next part and I pour it into the next part and I pour it into the next part. And so instead of taking 5 years to get a company to jump, I get it done in two, but I take nothing out of it. No liquidity, nothing. So I need somebody to stop me from doing that. I will work 100 to 120 hours a week, no problem. Get up at 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock in the morning, and go to bed with a phone in my hand at 11 o'clock at night. I can't do that anymore. I'm getting too old to do that. So I need financial planning and someone that will help provide due diligence on external managers, which is me. I need someone that will provide due diligence on my investments, do all the research. Because if I don't have someone to do that, I'll do it. And then I'll be up hours and hours and hours and hours. By having these kind of investment management services, I'm buying myself time. And time is the most expensive thing you have when you're wealthy. So financial planning for me is the key to buying time. Instead of spending the time to do due diligence on my investments and my external managers, my team does it for me and they supply me with a document to read in about 30 minutes. And then I'm up to date on all my investments. I'm up to date on what my team has done or hasn't done. And then I can act accordingly. However, there is a caveat to this. I can't remember how much she was worth. I think 22 million, something like that. She got all of her due diligence reports and this and that, but she never fully relied on it. She actually went and talked to every single person that worked for her. And that was fantastic. And so she did some of her own due diligence, but having those investment management services is critical. It's critical for me. Others, you know, you might need to have a fire lit underneath you, but I don't know how to do asset allocation. Everything, I do it completely wrong. I put everything in an egg and make the basket go faster. That's not the right way to do it. And so I need help with that. So instead of trying to educate myself, going to college, on and on and on, that is going to be a key focus in my multifamily office. The next thing is going to come, it's so ironic to look at these old papers and see what I wrote and to see what I'm doing now. It's just like, really, God, are you just giving me grief? What's going on here? So the next set of service is philanthropic management. A family office manages their philanthropy efforts, okay? And as most of what we are doing will be philanthropy, whether through our own private companies or through if we work through the foundation, it's still, you have to have record keeping of all your philanthropic activities, including all the planning. You're going to need assistance with the establishment and the administration of all these charitable institutions that you're going to start, and they're not like business. You need a professional in that area. You're going to need guidance in how to plan or come up with a plan for a donation strategy, especially if you don't want to be known, if you want to be hiding, you know. So there's all different kinds of ways to come up with a strategy for doing the actual donation. You are going to need advice on technical and operational management of charities, okay? Because you can screw up running a charity and you can be in massive legal problems. So you need to have somebody that has experience with the technical experience and the technical operation of management of charities. You're going to need someone who has the experience of formation to found grant making foundations and trusts. Because when you have that kind of money, you will do some kind of granting. So how do you set up that foundation? That's part of your family management company.
You're gonna need, your team should be able to organize charitable activities and do all the related due diligence. For instance, I'm planning to have another art show. I'm not done. I thought I was done doing art shows. I'm not. I'm planning to do a crazy, crazy, crazy work of art. I'm planning to do a whole body of work on a floating vessel. There's nobody that's done it. And I'm currently researching how to build the equipment that I'm going to need to make a floating gimbal on my boat. Yeah, I'm going to have a fucking fireball on my yacht. I'm going to burn shit. And then I'm going to sell it. But I've done work on public buildings. And so even though I haven't done a piece in 15 years, I still have all those old contacts. So I'm planning on doing an auction and doing an auction of wings. I'm going to make angel wings. And all the money for that is going to go to charitable activities. And a lot of my group members, they've heard me say, although they didn't realize I was talking about me, I was like, when we have grand openings for events, we want to be able to invite all the other humanitarians there so it can make the news. Well, I'm going to have a one-woman art show in about 3 years, and I want to be able to invite all you big shots there so we can write about who the who's who show came up at the art show. But I need a foundation that will do all the due diligence around that. There's a lot of legal liabilities in putting on charitable activities, and your single family multiple family wealth management, that they'll handle it all. That's what they're there for. What do we call this? It's called concierge, but there's another word for it. Here's how about this. Life management. Okay. Now, life management and budgeting, I guess. So what kind of services does your multifamily office do under life management? Well, club memberships, golf, yacht club. There's organizing all those kinds of memberships. You don't want to put that on your head of staff or your household staff, because that has to do just with your house. And you don't want to put that on your private secretary, because those change and that information may not get passed from one to the other. So you need an organizational group that takes care of your life management, all your clubs, management of all of your holiday properties. You know, you buy certain properties that, hey, you want to spend this holiday on, that holiday on. Well, there's a whole set of logistics to get you and your holiday party to your chateau, okay? And your family office management, they'll take care of all of it. They do all the travel arrangements. They'll do personal budget services as well. It's really funny, but one of the reasons why I really want to buy a yacht and live on a yacht, and I know that people are going to say bad things. I know they're going to say bad things. Oh, you're just rich. You're just doing that because, you know, you got the money and have it. Well, there's another reason. I am a type A personality. I will work every waking hour. I have not taken a vacation, a real vacation, in at least 30 years. I just don't. I get nervous not working. And so I talked to, this is going to sound so just bad. I've been talking to the super yacht captain. I'm going to end up hiring him. I mean, his background with the Irish Navy is just fantastic. So he really understands shipbuilding and a lot of other really cool stuff. Excuse me. Oh, excuse me. Oh, I don't know where these burps are coming from. They're so painful. But I told him, I said, listen, I said, I'm going to have a safe on my ship. And my captain and my chief stew is going to have a key to the safe. And he says, well, what are you going to put in it? And I said, all my work product. And you can't let me have none of it for 3 days. I'm going to work 4 days. I'm going to have 3 days off. You can't let me have none of it for 3 days. And he starts laughing. He goes, are you that bad? I go, yes, I am. When I had a private secretary before, I had two of them. I had four of them. One set worked 3 days a week. The other set worked 4 days a week. Basically, the ones that only worked 3 days a week, they were babysitters because I was in such a fucking foul mood because I didn't have any of my documents. Because my other gals, I would have them literally take them off. She had a little safe in her back seat of her car. And she would literally drive them off the property so I wouldn't do any work. Because otherwise, Oh, let me just fix this one thing. Just like right now. It's 3 o'clock in the morning. I should have gone to bed hours ago. I got all the notes for this to do this recording. And I should have gone to bed. Nope. Can't do it. Got to do it. Got to sit here till the whole thing's done. So life management and budgeting is going to become, you know, I'm going to need help with my team helping me talk to my staff so I'll have a better life management. My captain thinks it's funny. I said, listen, I want to make up for all those. Oh my God, my voice is quivering. I didn't realize how much this bothered me. I told my captain, I said, look, I'm an older woman and I want to make up for the years I didn't have vacation. So I'm going to take a vacation every single week, 3 days a week, every single week till the day I die. Or sometimes I'll take 20 days of vacation at a time, but I am going to force myself to be on vacation. And if I'm on a boat, in a pretty place where I can dive and I can do other things, I think I will break this. I think I will break this. Or if nothing else, I'm going to raise my quality of life tremendously. And I think that's important because when I was wealthy before, I didn't enjoy it then either because all I did was work. I never took time off. I was never satisfied. I never thought I had enough money. So I just having wealth management and life management will do two things. In some areas, it'll motivate you. And in other areas, it'll be like somebody at the back of your collar going, whoa, Nelly, whoa, girly, slow your butt down. You know, you need that if that's your personality, you know? So you can get either direction. And I know that a lot of people are not type A. They don't need that. But when you need it, you need it. Strategy. So that's the thing I miss about my husband being gone, is that we used to strategize over everything. We talk and talk and talk and talk and talk. And we strategized over our business. We strategized how we were going to do the financial aspects of our business, all kinds of stuff. But not having that it's really critical that if you don't do strategy with your spouse, that you have somebody that you can strategize with for your long-term management, okay? So this is beyond asset management advisory, okay? So, hold on. I can't remember. Okay, there we go. There's my notes. I didn't change the paper. I didn't turn the paper. So what kind of things are you going to need management services on? So financing, business promotion stuff. And for that, it would be like debt syndication, promoter financing, bridge financing, structured financing, private equity, mergers and acquisitions, management buyouts. That's really, you just don't want to do hostile takeovers. That's really, really, really ugly. Business development, okay? So all of those different services are much more productive if you're working with a team of people to help you strategize. So that's something else you can expect from a multiple family office. Now, you're going to eventually have your business is going to go to somebody else. So that's called business succession and legacy planning. I've got grandkids. Like, I don't think much, if any, of my wealth will be transferred to my children. I think everything's going to the grandkids. So because of that, because I have a daughter who is, her partner believes that, you know, her partner believes that, just believes differently than I do. Let's just put it that way, because I'm trying not to say bad things about her anymore. So you want to protect your wealth with transfer analysis. You want to do all kinds of planning related to management of all kinds of assets and income sources. Like for instance, my XRP at my, I'll leave, you know, when this happens and you do that, or find a company that is heavily involved in income sources. Or I may have planning set up that, say for instance, Brian is in my, another one of the families in my multiple family office, okay? And Brian is a whiz bang with XRP. So what I would do is I would say to plan for my grandchildren that whatever decisions Brian makes with his different assets, these different assets, that the foundation follow his same track to build wealth for my granddaughter, because my granddaughter doesn't know how to build that kind of wealth. And I seriously doubt there's anybody I'm going to hire that's going to know more than Brian. So Brian is the key person in that with that kind of knowledge. So in multiple family offices, if you've got somebody who's an expert in the field, you can have it set up so that all the other families in the family office follow the same advice of that one person. That's not uncommon. And that helps protect wealth transfer, because then it's not in the hands of the family management. It's in the advice of another family office member. That's why you want to have your multiple family offices with maybe, you know, two or three different families using the same services because you want to have them aligned. Having them aligned is really, really important. You're going to need help teaching your family how to do family governance, and your multiple family office will have lessons, you know, education and seminars for you to go to and for your family to go to, so they can learn how to maintain and keep the wealth that you've already built. This starts when they're young. You want to get your family involved in professional guidance classes for your wealth from the time they're about, you know, 10 years old. I mean, 8 years old, if you can do the, I don't know, but the youngest, the soonest they can possibly start with training and education for your children and grandchildren, that's the age you start. So the wealth transfer totally revolves around the education of your next generation, okay? And through it, it's issues like wealth management and financial literacy and learning wider economic matters. This is the stuff that's currently not taught in schools, in high schools, okay? So that training and education is what you can depend on from multiple family wealth management. And because you have multiple families, you might have multiple sets of kids learning at organized family meetings. You make an education plan that will put people in your wealth management plan for your family. So say you have a multifamily office, okay? And one of the people in, you know, one of the kids in the family, in one of the families say, hey, you know what? I want to be a hemp farmer and I want to grow cannabis worldwide. Well, as everybody else in the wealth management has other cannabis companies, it's in their best interest if one of the family members has that education. So you plan these educational commitments and you fund those plans as part of your wealth management services, and all of that can be added to the fees or to what you pay into your wealth, your multiple family. Wealth management. And then you also want to have coordination of educational classes with your outside advisors. You want to grow your advisors. You want to keep giving them educational classes so they can stay on point with what they're doing, okay, and what they're guiding you with. You can expect governance, a multiple family wealth management is going to do reporting and record keeping. You're going to be educated on how to start a reporting culture of the family office services. So they're going to show you how to govern. They're going to be there to help you govern your family right beside you, so you're not there alone. So they're going to help you consolidate and report all the family assets. They're going to help you do consolidated performance reporting, like, how are my employees working? How are the people that work for our company? How do you figure that out? That's something your multifamily management company will help you with. They're going to teach you how to do benchmark analysis, compare yourself to others, other companies in the same thing. You have to have annual performance reportings. And by having a multifamily management, they'll do all that for you or with you. You're going to need an online reporting system. They'll set up all that up and be responsible for taking care of it. And then, of course, tax preparation and reporting. But I don't think our taxes are going to be the same way anymore. Don't know, but we'll be there when it comes. Some of these things I don't think will be in the new world, such as tax advisory. I don't think the tax plans are going to need to be done anymore. I don't think tax implications are going to be of a problem anymore. I think they're going to do a flat tax, a new tax, and a flat tax, and that's it. So it's like A plus B equals C. There's no weaving around the law anymore. I think that compliance and regulatory assistance is going to be drastically different, drastically easier. I don't think, well, you are going to have auditing for everything. And that's something your wealth management, your family wealth management, multiple family wealth management will help you do, is set up a internal audit system so you can know where your company stands. Just like that document I wrote for governing my house, you're going to do the same thing for your business. You're going to need to establish a corporate governance mechanism, and you need all that documented. That's hundreds of hours of work. So multiple family management company, that amount of work can be split, because a lot of times if you're aligned, if you guys have the same goals for your wealth management, that can be across all families, and then it just can be partitioned out based on the family's needs. You're going to need to do performance monitoring for your upper management. If you've never done that before, it's a pain in the ass, especially if you have upper management that really, really, really screws up and you have to release them. They can see you seven ways from Sunday. So you need to know how to do performance monitoring. You want to learn how to offer recommendations on independent and advisory boards. Your multiple family wealth management group can help you do all of those things. But I don't, like I said, but some of them, I don't know what if we're still going to have to worry about that because of the tax laws are going to change, you know. Then all the administrative services. I hate doing this stuff, and this is the reason why, this was the one of the big reasons why I wanted a multiple family wealth management, is for the administrative services. General legal issues, payment, they do invoices, taxes, tax compliance, bill payments, reviews of expenses for authorization, opening and closing bank accounts, bank statement reconciliation, employment management, and employment benefits. Legal referrals, management of legal firms, public relations referrals, and management of public relations firms, technology system referrals, and management of all those vendors, compliance and control management. All of that stuff is a huge time sink. And if you have your multifamily office handle all that, it frees you up so much. Just total freedom. Yay! And then it kind of touched on this a little bit, but succession planning. And that's how you're going to, you know, usually the first generation makes it, the second generation tries to save it, and the third generation spends it all. That's just the way it is without any kind of management. So long-term management. So with that, you want to make sure that the fourth and the fifth generation still has funds. So that's through succession planning, and a multifamily management company that you put together will help you with that. And some of the services you can expect are continued planning of your family wealth management, and adding unanticipated disruptions. Okay, there's ways to plan for continuity. If, like, what happens if, you know, what happens if I get taken out? You know, how is my wealth management going to be handled until my grandkids are old enough to take over? So there's contingency planning that you have to do, or they will help you do. You need an evaluation of your strengths and your weaknesses, the opportunities and the threats of all your senior executives, both inside your family, like, I don't know how that's going to come up right now, unless my daughters are working, and outside the family. For me, it's more outside is what I'm more worried about. But by the time my grandkids get old enough, they might have kids, and then that might, you know, they might have that kind of concern too. But that's why you need your multifamily management team to help you go through this. Every couple of years, you're going to go through a reevaluation of family board members and their roles of what they're going to do for your family. And then also family board members in regard of their roles for non-family directors. Okay. They're going to help you structure corporate social responsibilities. They're going to help you set up platforms or programs to do the same. How, you know, when do I step down? Okay. So that's intergenerational estate transfer plans. You're going to have to come up with a family charter or a constitution. And so you need to have your formalized structure and mission of your family business. You need to define the roles and responsibilities of all of the family members and all the non-family members. And for me, that, you know, for me, I've got some cousins that I'm thinking about reaching out to. I don't know, but that's something I'm going to discuss with my multifamily wealth management team when I put it together. I'm going to develop policies and procedures in line with the family values and goals. And then there'll be a determinative process to resolve critical business-related family disputes. And that's something I'm going to need outside help with, because what am I going to do when I'm 75 years old and I'm having an argument with my 21-year-old granddaughter over running the company? So you want to put those kind of things in place before that problem comes into the forefront of what you're doing. The other thing is, you know, after the 2008, 2009, all the crazy financial crash that happened, I kind of thought of some other things that I'm going to add into my family management services. And that is, where's that? Risk analysis, measurement and reporting of risk analysis. This is way close. Assessment of insurance requirements, policy acquisitions and monitoring, making sure that all things that need to be insured are insured so you don't lose your whole stinking kit and caboodle. You're going to have evaluation of existing policies and titling of assets, because how you title your assets can really change a lot of things as well. You need an evaluation of your security options for your clients, for the people you work for. Like if you're starting whatever business you're going to do, you have to have an evaluation of your security for whether or not security is even needed in some cases. You're going to have a disaster recovery option, electronic disaster offsite storage, and take care of all that. And then how do you protect your assets? That might include offshore investments. That might include investments in multiple countries. You're going to have to develop strategies, especially if you're hedging or you've got concentrated investment positions. I know that most all of my investment positions will be completely revolving around the ISO 222 coins or cannabis. There's not going to be anything else, pretty much. Maybe sailboats, but pretty much just cannabis and crypto. CC and me. we're going to have to develop strategies for physical security of the family. And that's, I mean, I've done a whole talk about that. The data security and confidentiality. And have my team, your team will review social media policy. You might have a person that does all your social media, and they develop your reputation, and they do a management strategy for your reputation. So those are a lot of the services that you can expect from your multiple family wealth management. Okay, so the nitty gritty. Do we, don't we, do we, don't we, do we, don't we? Every single part of your family office, in terms of assets under management, you're going to need to determine whether or not you outsource those services, okay? Outsourcing can be beneficial from a cost efficiency and a know-how perspective, and offering advantages to family offices that can be beneficial from a cost efficiency or a know-how perspective are things like you're going to have reduced costs and overheads and improved staff productivity. The economy of scale, because there's going to be multiple families using the same people. And this is particularly for high-value professional services. And that can often result in lower pricing for related services. You're going to have the benefits of objective advice from experienced professionals who possess specialized skills. Help with defending the family's office regulatory independence. Because depending on who you outsource your investment management to, it allows investment decisions to be made by external providers based on their own personal knowledge of that regulatory area of the businesses that you're in. Now, in a lot of businesses, that really won't be of importance, but in the hemp and the cannabis industry, that's critical. Due diligence and continuing monitoring can be carried out by the directors of the family office to ensure performance and security against risk. So those are some major advantages by having these kind of people in place. So what do you keep in-house? Okay, mostly the things you keep in-house are pretty much related to confidentiality issues or independence of the family issues, either one of those kind of things. And those can be higher levels of confidentiality and privacy because it's just the families that know. Assurance of independent and trusted advice because, again, it's just the same families. Consolidated management of family wealth because it's the same set of skills. Development of certain skills specifically tailored to the family's needs. This is what I was talking about with Brian's specific skill set over a currency, cryptocurrency. Also, you want to keep investment knowledge inside your family. Part of the way you do this is you plan to be successful by, like, one of your kids is good with math. You know, hey, you want to run the family, you know, the banking part of the family. So keeping it in directly inside the family, not just inside the family office. So these are some major considerations as what you're going to put out or have in-house. So you kind of got to work, have meetings in the beginning to figure out what's the right balance and how to identify those balances for what's best for management in-house and what can be out, you know, outsourced. So some of the questions that you're going to ask yourself are, who should be the beneficiaries of the family office? And what is the overall strategy of the family to secure and expand its wealth over generations? That's a huge question. Is the family's priority traditional asset management of liquid funds with or without a portfolio of direct family entrepreneurial investments? Where does philanthropy fit into the mix, if at all? Should the family office act as an asset manager for all the family members? Or should it just be an advisor for some specific services related to specific selected family members? Is the family office core task that of financial advisor, or more of an educational advisor, or an educational facilitator for the next generation? There's a whole document of about, I don't know, 300 or 400 questions I have, that once you determine which way you're going to go, then the questions are going to be over the cost and budget, expertise, regulatory, you know, regulatory or not, technology and infrastructure, and how complex you're going to do this, and the data confidentiality. These are the six key focuses on what you want to keep in-house. Those answers will determine what you're going to keep in-house and what you're going to send outside of your house. So where do those things lie? Okay. So I made a list of services and I put it in the service category, and I give you the in-house and outsource. Why you would do either one? Because if I'm going to talk to somebody, if I'm going to reach out to somebody and say, hey, would you like to be in a multiple family office? You want to be involved with me in my multiple family office? We're going to have to come together to determine in-house and outsourcing. And if you don't know the difference between the two, it's critical that you know before you get involved in one of these things. So, type service. Investment management and asset allocation. That category is financial planning. If you do it in-house, it's basic financial planning and asset allocation decisions should be provided in-house if you do your family services in-house. If you outsource them, the more complex and the more specialized and diverse assets make outsourcing a practical option. It requires a tremendous amount of knowledge about these assets. If you don't have it, then you want to outsource it. Tax and legal advisory. That's advice category. If you do it in-house, it's selectively done in-house. But you may not have the knowledge to do it. So if you outsource it, you outsource this to a trusted advisor to ensure state-of-the-art quality of services. Reporting and record keeping. That is governance. In-house, record keeping and documentation demand extreme confidentiality. So if you can possibly do that part in-house, that ideally should be done in-house. If you outsource it, basic reporting tools and software can be provided externally. Okay. Philanthropic management, that is financial planning. If you do it in-house, your in-house expertise should serve for assistance with philanthropic activities. If you outsource it, you're going to set up a foundation, and all the related activities are often outsourced to a consultancy due to the extreme demands of the philanthropic activity. Basically, outsource it. Compliance and regulatory assistance, that's advisory. So, if you're going to do it in-house, the reason why you would is because of the size of the family office. And if you have too many people in your family, then that's going to require full-time legal and accountancy expertise that you're not going to be able to do it. So if you outsource it, generally full-time legal staff might be an unnecessary and costly addition, but depending on how many people are in the family. So if you have enough that keeps that legal beagle working all the time, then it's worth it. If you don't, then outsource it. Risk management and insurance services, that category is advisory. So some of the risk management skills should be provided in your family to ensure ultimate peace of mind, because you guys know your business. Okay, so because you know your business, you know where you want to risk or not risk. Now, if you outsource it, these guys, outside risk and insurance professional guidance professionals, they can usually offer trusted expert advice built on either through hands-on expertise or years of doing risk management. I'm not doing mine. I'm doing outsourcing that. I talked a lot about life management and budgeting. Excuse me, that's financial planning. Most people will do that for yourself in-house. And that's if you're worried about confidentiality. Specialized services would be brought in-house unless specialized services can be outsourced. So what I need is not very specialized at all. I just need help. So I'm going to outsource that. Training and education of family governance, that strategy service category. This can be done in-house. Your team would identify what kind of options for education based on each person's interest, self-interest. If you outsource it, it'll give you a much better expert opinion on higher education that is required for these kind of trainings and development. And you can bring people in to do that. Outsource in business advisory, that's a service category strategy. So usually, if you do it in-house, it's your general counsel, it's your lawyer, or the financial director of the family business is involved in it. That's not a wiggly piggly thing. You have to have somebody that knows how to do that in your family. If not, you've got to have services of an external expert. That way you have a much better competitive edge. Estate and wealth transfer, that is strategy category. And an in-house expertise is required because you don't want that data you don't want that data compromised. You want to be super confidential with that data. Now you can consult external legal advisors for any kind of procedural and legal issues with estate and wealth transfer, and I would cover my behind, and I'm gonna do outsource that. Administrative services, that's governance. Administrative services require daily monitoring, okay? And most of the time that's done in-house. However, I believe the size of things that we're going to be running and operating, you're going to need to outsource it. And yeah, it's going to lead to greater costs, but it's buying time. There's some things you need to consider. And the costs of running a family office, I can give you some background on that, internal and external conflict, what kind of things come up as issues, how to pick family office professionals, the information I used, and what how I picked my family, or what I'm going to be looking for when I pick for my family management. And then constructing a business plan. I'm really good at constructing business plans. So this is going to be part one. And I'm probably going to record a second part of this tomorrow. But I just thought that if I just broke it down and what I did and what I'm planning to do, it might help the rest of you as well. You can share this recording with people that you want to share with, but just understand that this information is very valuable. And we're going to have a lot of people that are going to want to take family wealth management classes and understand about all of this. And this information boosts you way higher than the rest of the millionaires that are coming out. So I ask that you keep this under your hat and share it with people very sparingly. You're welcome to share it, but just be careful who you send it to. Anyway, 10/10/23 is the day of the recording. I wish all of you a fantastic life. I hope the RV serves you well and you're able to be humanitarian for years and years, and you have wealth management that lasts for a generation. God bless you all, and thank you, Lord, for what you've given to me for all of these times.